Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. I'm Victoria Craig. It's been 6 months since Russia invaded its neighbor Ukraine. The war has ravaged what was once Europe's breadbasket. It's disrupted global supply chains, and it's caused deep, widespread economic pain the world over. In the early days, in late February, March, and April, charities were overwhelmed by donations and offers from people who wanted to help. But now,
in the first week, the feelings were fresh and it felt like everyone is watching Ukraine. But after a few weeks, it felt like the war started to slowly fade out of their media bubbles.
As war continues to rage, pain and anguish isn't just counted in dollars and cents.
For a few months, it was too painful, actually. I think that's why I stopped cooking completely. It was almost triggering and it gave me feelings of guilt. How can I be enjoying cooking or enjoying anything when so many people are not?
We're looking at the cost of war through the eyes of those directly affected, right here on Business Daily from the BBC World Service. I'm standing at the threshold of an open doorway of a house in East London. Suddenly, a woman in a brown and white gingham dress with hair tied loosely back peeks around the corner of her living room before rushing over to envelop me in a familiar-feeling hug.
Hi, how are you?
We've arrived at the home of Ukrainian chef and cookbook author Olia Hercules, and she's apologizing for the window washer, who she forgot was coming that afternoon. We laugh about the scheduling mix-up, and I assure her it won't get in the way of our interview. As we set up to record, we talk casually about her new cookbook, how her family is doing, and the way to-do lists never seem to have an end. This laughter, the banality of conversation, even the sunshine outside, it's all a stark contrast to the last time I was here. It was March, and the siege on Olia's hometown had only just begun. The weather matched the global mood. It was overcast and rainy. We sat in a sitting room with a big picture window, but none of us cared to stare out of it. Instead, we focused on the comfort of a warm pot of tea and talked about the shock of war.
Thank you so much. That's
Olia had spent days, which would become weeks, frantically trying to source enough protective gear to send to her brother, Sasha, who is still fighting on the front lines. The uncertainty and stress, she told me then, weighed on her mentally and physically. So much so, she couldn't even think about stepping into the kitchen. One headline even called her the chef who couldn't cook. But now,
today I'm going to show you how to make a Balkan-inspired vegetable bake, and it contains all of my favorite ingredients ever.
That has all changed.
I am cooking again. Yeah, it came back.
Olia and I are again sitting together, this time in her living room. It's summer now, and it's hot outside. But the sun peeking through the drawn curtains that are supposed to help shield us from the heat wave bearing down reminds us of the season. The war is still on, but when I ask her about cooking, a smile instantly spreads across her face.
It came back, actually, when my parents left Kakhovka. So they drove through Europe. They got to Italy, where my cousin has just bought a holiday home. So I flew to that small town ahead of time.
And then she got to work, because her first instinct upon arrival was to do something that would bring some kind of comfort to the parents she'd been longing to bring to safety for so long. Her instincts instructed her to do something that felt familiar.
I went to the local Italian supermarket, and I couldn't find any dill, but I found some boiled beetroot, and I found an old gnarly chicken that was really good for making broth, and I made them a really huge vat of borscht because I wanted them to come back after that grueling journey into an environment that felt like home. And so that was my way back into cooking.
Once the stove was on, soup bubbling away, the practice of cooking and using food to comfort came rushing back to Olia, and she hasn't been able to put her utensils down since.
Well, for a few months, it was too painful, actually. I think that's why I stopped cooking completely. It was almost triggering, and it gave me feelings of guilt, of feelings like, how can I be enjoying cooking or enjoying anything when so many people are not? And but recently, as I say, I've been working on the state of my mind, and I've been training myself to find joy again, because if we allow Russians and Putin to steal all of joy from our lives, like my mom said, then they have won.
Though she's focused on cooking again, Olya hasn't lost her passionate fundraising efforts directed at helping those still left in her southern Ukrainian hometown, now under Russian control. So she's married the two.
Hello, my name is Olya Hercules. Welcome to The Food That Makes Us, recipes to comfort and connect us.
So I launched a Patreon subscription service where I share Ukrainian cookery videos and live sessions and workshops, etc.
This is the first set of videos that we're filming since the war started in February. So the energy is going to be a little bit more subdued, but such is life. Please bear with us.
I almost have 500 subscribers who have been amazing and have stuck with me for about 3 months now.
Across once as well. Don't rush. You know, if it's your first time, if you're practicing, you know, knife skills, just do everything quite slowly. And then I'm just going to cut across and make sure.
And I use that money to wire to the Kherson region, specifically to the 22 families that used to work for my mom and dad. So I've been supporting them for the past 3 months because there is no work there. In fact, as far as we know, 2/3 of the town have left, evacuated. All of the doctors left. There's no medical help. There's no humanitarian aid. It's a really worrying situation. So, yeah, so Patreon and my amazing patrons have been helping me to raise about £6,000 a month regularly. And almost all of that money is going to these families every month.
Patreon is an online membership platform set up in 2013. It allows people to work on a kind of freelance model. Creators like Olya can set up an account with a subscription-style payment model. And in exchange for payment, they post exclusive content like how-to videos. Ronnie Krieger is the general manager of Patreon Europe. He explains how it all works.
There is direct campaigns from people being on the ground in Ukraine, supporting Ukrainian creators. There is projects from people that had to flee the country and are now in different countries in the world trying to support the people at home. And there's a lot of different projects that directly or indirectly support Ukraine. And it's very hard for me to give you a specific number about how many people that are. But it's definitely a significant amount of creators of all sorts. We have also a lot of activities still going on about people that want to launch on the platform. Just today, I've learned about a group of young Ukrainians that are now in Berlin that would like to support people on the ground in the Ukraine and are starting a new membership site to support people. And this is an ongoing activity. And we have visual artists, we have cooks, we have animal shelters, we have all sorts of creators, musicians, NGOs that are supporting Ukraine. So it's very diverse.
And when it comes to how people are able to use the money that they raise on the platform, you know, the last time we talked to Olya Hercules back in March, she was saying that she was running into various obstacles when she tried to get money from PayPal or other platforms. And of course, there are rules in various other places about raising money for certain things like military grade weapons or protection, and being able to use money, fundraised money for those kinds of things. Do you have any restrictions like that? Or is there a monitoring process that people have to watch for or be aware of when they're raising money?
We did have a very public case early on in the war situation with an NGO that was specifically stating on their Patreon platform that they were raising money to buy military equipment and to train snipers and details like that. And of course, that is a tricky situation for a company like ours, because while we are all incredibly understanding and supportive of the situation, our platform can't be the one to then in these cases decide, is this hand grenade better than another one? Is this cannon better than another one? So there are restrictions that we have to follow. And you also raised a point earlier about the payment restrictions. Of course, there's international restrictions in place to some of the territories, whether that's payment methods, whether that is Russian creators as well. You know, we have thousands of Russian creators on our platform who are not supporting this war, who are very outspoken on the war, but cannot get paid at the moment. There's very unfortunate issues in all of these scenarios that sometimes we have to abide by the laws, sometimes we have to abide by certain regulations, which even internally might be frustrating, but it is the way it is, especially if you become a global platform like ours.
While rules and regulations can present challenges for fundraisers, fatigue provides another hurdle. It's not just Ukraine that many people and organizations are asking the public to support. There are still appeals for humanitarian needs in Afghanistan and Myanmar, economic aid that's needed for Syrian refugees, calls for food donations to Ethiopia and the Democratic Republic of Congo. The list is so long, the United Nations earlier this year had problems meeting some of its fundraising targets, which officials said means future goals will need to be more than doubled. And a representative for the Norwegian Refugee Council in April told the BBC that organization felt, quote, overstretched, underfunded, and overwhelmed like never before. It all means that half a year into the Ukraine war, people might begin to turn their attention to other things. So fundraisers are turning to new strategies.
Hello, world. This is Ukraine speaking. We know there's war all over your news feeds, and everyone's asking you to save Ukraine, but we won't.
We offer you to fight. This ad is by the Ukraine-based charity Aid Legion. It worked with local ad agency Drama Queen to come up with a campaign that, honestly, they say wouldn't bum people out.
Real. No need to grab the weapons. Please, finish your coffee. The thing is, you can fight with donations by joining our Aid Legion.
Its co-founder, Anna Goncharova, who is now in Austria, says the point is to rally people to the cause in an uplifting, impassioned way.
Basically, the charity is created by a group of people, part of which is my agency people, and part of them are the production studio TV Lab. Just with the beginning of war, we started the charity because we had a lot of people from Europe and States coming to us asking what is a good charity to donate. And then we also started to have a lot of connections with Ukrainian army and Ukrainian volunteers. And at some point, we just understood that maybe we can make a small charity.
I was looking through some of the videos that you guys have done for the ad campaigns to sort of raise awareness about what you do. They're obviously very different from other aid advertisements that we've seen, especially throughout the war. How did you get the idea to take that tongue-in-cheek kind of upbeat message?
When we were creating the videos, it was like 3 or 4 weeks after February 24th. And it already felt like people are starting to have this war fatigue. In the first week, the feelings were fresh and it felt like everyone is watching Ukraine. Everyone is feeling that it's a big tragedy and it's in top of the media feeds of people in the whole world. But after a few weeks, it felt like it's normal and the war started to slowly fade out of their media bubbles. And we felt like we have to shake people's feelings up a little bit with our communication if we really want to reach them. Because there was a lot of communication from charities asking for help, showing tragic pictures, which is right, but which stopped working. So we felt like we have to offer something very different so that we could be noticed.
And has it worked?
I would say it did. Now, if I am right, the foundation covered around $145,000 for our projects, which is quite a lot for a small charity.
And where does all that money go? How do you decide what groups to give money to, what causes to give money to? Who makes those decisions?
From the very beginning, we decided that we will pay attention to different projects. Some of them were helping the military. Some of them were helping the civilians. Like, for example, our latest project is helping to restore a lyceum, a school in Kiev region, in Gostomel. It's one of the little towns next to Kiev which suffered the most from the first phase of war. And the school was completely destroyed and lots of kids were unfortunately killed in that town too. One of the foundation organizers, Eugene, he knew the director of that school personally. And he just decided that that's a small project, which maybe big foundations wouldn't pay attention to. But he felt like we could be helpful and we could like really gather some money and help.
Oh, nice clean windows. Thank you, Robin.
I've got my wartime sunflowers. That's what my mom said. Look at this. This one is like the color of caked blood, my mom said.
Trying to keep the world interested is a tiring task. Chef Olia Hercules now has a twist on an old familiar phrase to describe it.
You know, before it used to be a work and life balance, and now it's a work and war and life balance. So I just try my best for self-preservation and in order to be able to keep going, to take breaks. And so I started cooking again. I started doing a little bit of embroidery. In the garden, there's a small field of sunflowers growing. So I've been doing tiny bits of gardening whenever I can.
She recently took a trip to England's southern coast in an attempt to unplug. But Olia is doing anything but resting. She's just released her fourth cookbook called Home Food. It highlights her own family recipes and stories from Ukraine. It also draws on other foodies for their stories. The whole point is to prove we all have something in common, food and the need for comfort.
It's a lot about connection. It's not just about food that we cook at home. It's about food that we cook at home that resonates wherever you come from. So I understand everyone who's tired of the Ukrainian war and, you know, tired of the trauma of it. So hopefully through food, it will, keep it in the news and will make people kind of remember that we're not just headlines. We're people just like everyone else with our homes and our children and animals and plants and aspirations and dreams and love for everything that we've grown up with. And I hope that food is a powerful tool to keep going.
For more information about Russia's war in Ukraine and to stay up to date on the very latest news, you can visit bbc.com/news. This edition of Business Daily was produced by Stephen Ryan. I'm Victoria Craig. That's it from us. Thank you so much for listening.